As a child growing up in Ames, Nancy Sproul Geis struggled with severe dyslexia. She was even held back a year in school. Now, she has published her first novel. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. The novel is called The Eighth Sea. It's a sweeping historical romance, a story full of twists and turns, but the story of how the novel came to be is equally as compelling. After years of discouragement at school, in 1978, Geis found herself in the high school English class of John Forsman. Mr. Forsman changed her life. Today, I'll talk with them both. Join our conversation after the news. This is an archive edition of Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Grade school was a struggle for Nancy Sproul Geis. Learning to read and write was difficult. Now, she is the author of a novel called The Eighth Sea. It's a sweeping historical romance. And the book would never have come about if it weren't for the help and encouragement of John Forsman, a high school English teacher now retired from Ames. They are both here today to share their story. And we also want to hear from you this hour. Is there a teacher in your past that changed your life? Tell us your story. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Nancy Sproul Geis, hello.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, Charity, I'm delighted to be here. Thanks so much. And thanks to Mr. Forsman and to Iowa Public Radio for inviting me on today.
And John Forsman, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Charity. It's an honor to be on the program, and it's an honor to be here with Nancy.
Well, Nancy, let's go back. Let's go way back to elementary school when you were learning to read and write. When were you first diagnosed with dyslexia?
Well, actually, when I was in elementary school, I'm 52 now, so it was really before the diagnosis of a term dyslexia. I was in junior high before I actually heard that term, and when I heard it for the first time, I thought, oh, that was me. But as I look back on it, I had all the classic symptoms of a person with dyslexia. Very early on, it was nearly impossible for me to read and write, because, as you know, people with dyslexia process things differently and they see things backwards. So, if I tried to read, even reading something that was familiar, like if I wanted to say "I saw you there," I would reverse the word and it would say "I was you there." Or if I was reading my brother's name, which I knew very well was Tom, I would read Mott. And math was especially difficult because it would be, instead of writing 87, I'd put 79. Both of those were great struggles early on. And it was, again, before the time that it was really recognized, at that time, people just thought, well, you know, here's a student that is not very smart. So I struggled with that for a long time. And teachers had the best intention, but they just didn't understand at that time what was causing it.
And you were actually held back a year in school?
I was. And it was an attempt to really help me. But, you know, it didn't ever get to the root of the problem. So I just went from the bottom of one class to the bottom of the next class. And that was devastating in a number of ways. If I look back now, my mother, thankfully, had kept so much of my work, and I was able to go back and see some of my old papers. And instead of someone realizing, wow, you know, she really did the math right, it would be red check, red check, red check, and a big F over the top of it. They just didn't understand in those days that that's what was the cause of it. So,
what did your parents think? Because parents have a much better grasp of who their child is than really anybody. And I'm sure your parents could see that you were a bright kid.
Yeah, matter of fact, my mother just said to me this morning, yeah, we did not realize that she had dyslexia. I mean, they certainly realized that something was not right because I was. You know, school was such a struggle for so long, but they knew that I was compensating for it in other ways, and I think orally especially, I made up for it.
as you went through school, did you learn how to cope? I mean, was there a time when those F's stopped being F's and started being C's and B's and maybe even better?
Well, you know, it was kind of a long process because once you get behind in some areas, especially math, it's really difficult to catch up. And so every year I would start off behind and then I would get even further behind because I didn't understand the concept. So, the early years of elementary school were pretty much a disaster. but as I got older, I was able to compensate in some other ways. And I was very fortunate in that I grew out or I learned to compensate for a lot of this. So I eventually was able to read, obviously, and write. And so I think in some ways it was a blessing in disguise because I was able to overcome. I mean, I think I became stronger in certain areas, especially using my imagination and learning to write. So
it must have colored the way that you thought about yourself, though. By the time you reached high school, what did you think about your intellectual abilities?
Well, you know, I think especially when you, in the early years, they have such a profound impact on the way you think about yourself. And I just always had the sense that I wasn't very smart. And that plagued me for a long time. And it plagued me in kind of a lot of different ways. Even to this day, I still don't like to do things like I will never want to keep score in any sort of game or otherwise, because I just, you know, still have that inner fear of, oh no, I might be a failure. So I think by the time I got to high school, I realized that, you know, we all are strong in some areas and we can compensate. And I was certainly seeking out ways to be able to overcome and excel.
Well, let's fast forward a little bit to 1978. And you were in high school. What year were you in high school in 1978?
Well, in 1978, I was a junior at Ames High School. And I was incredibly blessed to have, well, throughout the Ames education, I had a number of just unbelievably awesome teachers. But two of the best were Mrs. Grace Bowski from Ames High and Mr. John Forsman with us today. They were sort of the dynamic duo at Ames High School in the English department, and I was so blessed to be able to have both of those awesome teachers.
So in Mr. Forsman's English class, you were given an assignment to write a paper that drew on an emotion. Can you tell me about that assignment?
Well, you know, there was actually two separate assignments. The one that I think you may be referring to was one in which, up until that point, I really had not been able to share some of the impact that having the dyslexia had had on my life. I don't think until I was a senior in high school or a junior in high school I could ever use the word flunked. I mean, I couldn't get the words out of my mouth. So he asked me to write a paper, and that was, and I think the basic assignment was drawing on, you know, trying to overcome. And so I really shared that experience. And it was really the first time that I had been able to really express it in length. But Mr. Forsman had such a safe environment in his class that I felt like that was the appropriate place to be able to do that.
And John, do you remember reading that paper?
I certainly do, Charity. Even though it's been 34 years ago, I still can feel the emotion from that first paper, because Nancy has this natural exuberance for life, and she also is very focused, and she wanted to get something important out of the class. And the movement of the class was from narration to description to exposition to argument, and if time, we often did a literary criticism paper. And so the very first assignment was a narration to illustrate a point. And I think probably she wasn't totally conscious of this, but it was an opportunity to begin to discover the power in your own experience. And even though she had had a lot of painful experiences through school, in that first paper, she began to sense that, my, truths can come out of all experience and certainly painful experience. So she wrote about the taunts that she had experienced in elementary and how she was out of sync with the class that she started with at in the AIM schools. And yet I can see her this very moment sitting in my class 34 years ago, just very exuberant and excited about learning and writing. And I couldn't put those two things together. So I remember feeling really sad that here was a young person with an authentic voice, very open about her experiences with dyslexia, and drawing truths from those experiences. And so that very first paper might have had more impact than either one of us really realized, because it gave her a sense that if she went back to her experiences and awakened them, she could form truths which were very empowering. And so I think probably she came into class wanting something from the class that no teacher could design. And so in the design and movement of the class, out of that first assignment, maybe came an awareness of how she could use her experiences. And she was off and running.
Well, and when you read that paper, clearly you recognized not just a student with promise, but a young person who probably didn't understand that they had that promise, that potential.
And that's true of a lot of students, and probably of all of us. We had to be discovered. And that discovery process started, of course, with my dear friend and colleague, Grace Bowski. And she started that process, and we taught side by side, literally. And so when Nancy was a sophomore, something was ignited, and I had the wonderful opportunity to build on that.
And Mrs. Bowski has since passed away, or we'd probably be talking with her today as well.
That's right. She passed away in 2006, and even though this journey that Mrs. Bowski and I had with Nancy started 34 years ago, actually probably 36 for Grace, it has been a long journey. And 25 years ago, actually, Mrs. Bowski and I worked on the first manuscript together that Nancy wrote.
Wonderful. Well, we'll get to that part of the story in just a little while. I'm talking today with novelist Nancy Sproul-Geis. Her novel is called The Eighth Sea. It's a sweeping historical romance, and it could not have been possible without the influence of her high school English teachers. And we have one of those English teachers with us today, John Forsman, now a retired high school English teacher from Ames, Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa. You're listening to an archive edition of Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, I'm talking with Nancy Sproul-Geis and John Forsman. Nancy Sproul-Geis is the author of a book called The Eighth Sea. It's a sweeping historical romance, and it was many, many years in the making. The first draft of this novel was actually written 25 years ago, and now it's been reaching readers all over the place and moving readers. And this novel could not be possible without John Forsman, who was a high school English teacher in Ames, Iowa. He was Nancy's high school English teacher in 1978. And we're talking about their relationship and how his classroom really changed her life. As I mentioned before, Nancy struggled for many years with dyslexia. She had a difficult time in elementary school. And here she is in high school in an advanced composition class. She's written a paper that allows Mr. Forsman to really see her potential. And if you'd like to know more about this story, we've also put up a link to the wonderful article that was in the Des Moines Register that brought this to our attention. That link is up on our Facebook page. And Nancy, do you remember how Mr. Forsman responded to that first composition of yours in his class?
You know, I have two vivid memories, and the one that really struck with me was with the first paper, that the one dealing with dyslexia. Yes, very much. He was, as I said, he was such a safe harbor of being able to express oneself, and I remember his just really kind and encouraging words, and as I recall, he expressed surprise at the history of my, you know, my background. But the next one was another paper that I wrote, and it was on a much lighter note. And he, I'll never forget his reaction. He laughed heartily at it, and he asked, and it was a very simple thing, but he just said, you know, Nancy, I would like to be able to share this paper with future classes. And that one sentence really had such a profound impact on my life, because I realized that, I mean, given my background, here was somebody who wanted to share my work with future classes. And I was so moved by that. And then also a statement that Mrs. Bowski said, you know, also changed my life. And it was a very simple sentence, but she said to me one day, you know, Nancy, you should be writing. And that one sentence, along with Mr. Forsman's influence, just, you know, stayed with me until I realized one day that I wanted to make that happen. So it's amazing the impact that just one or two sentences can have on changing someone's life.
What happened to you after high school? What path did you take?
Well, I went to Iowa State, and I actually ended up graduating with honors. So there was a, and I think a lot of that had repercussions from, you know, the high school English experience that I had. And after high school, my husband and I married my high school sweetheart from Ames High, and we moved to Austin, Texas. And then after we had our first child, it stayed with me that I, you know, wanted to write, and I kept thinking of Mrs. Bowski saying, you should be writing. So after I had our first daughter, I thought, well, I'll try to make that happen. And that's really what prompted me to begin.
And this story that you have written about in the Eighth Sea, I've read that it really came to you sort of in a rush. What was that experience?
It was amazing. When I decided to actually write the book, I thought about all the things that I love in stories, and I love seeking and finding and romance and the power of never-ending love and, you know, mostly the power of overcoming against all odds. And I really like history. And so as soon as I kind of had these thoughts, and I think it was also in part because I had just had an infant, and the love between a mother and her daughter was really, it was so forefront in my mind that I think that played a part in this story coming together. And it really came very rapidly. The whole story in about 24 hours came to me. And then it was quite funny, because as I would be sitting in a traffic light or in line at the bank, different scenes would come flooding to me, and so I would have to stop what I was doing and write it out. So I'd be at lunch with friends, and I'd say, oh, excuse me, and I'd have to write down a portion of the story on a napkin. So when I finally sat down to compose it on paper, I literally had hundreds of little pieces of paper with the beginning, the end, the middle. I knew where they went, but they were all in pieces.
How long did it take you? I mean, you had your first infant, but you're a mother of three, right?
I am, and yeah, this may go down in history as the longest process to complete a novel.
I don't know. There are many people who have been at it a very long time, but you had to be extremely busy at that time in your life. So how long did it take you to get all the pieces together?
Well, I spent about a year early on writing pretty much night and day. Just once I started writing, I just couldn't stop. So I spent a great deal of time early on, and then I spent the next 2 or 3 years researching the book, because it's set in three parts of the world in the 1700s. So it entailed a lot of research. So I did that, and then life just got crazy and busy. We had two other kids, and I was still plagued with kind of the thoughts of, oh, it's really not good enough to get it out there. 25 years ago, after I finished the first draft, I sent it back to Mr. Forsman and Mrs. Bowski, as Mr. Forsman said, and, they read it and were really encouraging and encouraged me to keep keep working on this and to get it out there, but I just couldn't get over the thought of, oh, no, it's really not good enough. I need to...
Well, I think it speaks to your relationship with the two of them and how important they must have been to you that they were the first person you thought of or the first people you thought of to get in touch with when you had put this novel together.
Oh, absolutely. They were, you know, who else would I possibly send it to but the two people that had such a profound impact because they believed in me. And when you believe in somebody, it changes the course of their life. So,
had you been in touch with them over the years before this novel came about?
No, I hadn't. I had been busy with the kids. And so the first 7 or so years after high school, we had not had contact. So I just out of the blue wrote to them and said, hey, would you mind? I know it's a long time since we've talked, but would you mind taking a look at this? And of course, they just opened it with open arms. So.
And John, do you remember getting that first contact from Nancy after all those years? Do you remember how you felt?
Well, it's been a long time. The more recent journey with her has, really impacted me. I know at the time, Grace and I shared the manuscript. We knew that there was a story here that should be encouraged. And at the end of the time that we focused on that manuscript, it came to an end. And I remember, and I've told Nancy this before, she sent us both beautiful bouquets, in gratitude for our time spent with her beloved manuscript. But, that ended, and then 25 years, more years went by.
And after you went through this sort of editing process, really, with Mrs. Bowski and Mr. Forsman, and you had this book, what did you do with it then, Nancy?
Well, I pretty much put it aside. I just thought, oh, it's not really ready to be seen. So every few years, though, I would pull it out, and I would rework it and rewrite, start working on it again. And I had a sense that this would always, at some point I would release it, but I just could never just bring myself to do it, even though throughout the years I'd have a limited number of friends read it, and they were encouraging too, and family, but I just couldn't bring myself to do it. So,
what do you think was holding you back?
I think it was the fear that was keeping me from doing it, of it not being good enough. And when I finally, thankfully, after about 25 years, when I recognized and kind of put a name to that, when I realized that it was fear that was keeping me from doing it, I thought, this is ridiculous. I can't be ruled by this. And, my heroine of the story, her name is Brenna, and she's a really strong character that overcomes a lot. And I actually, it sounds strange, but I learned a lot from my characters, and I would find myself thinking, now what would Brenna do in this situation? She wouldn't allow fear to get her down. So at that point I realized, I'm not gonna prevent fear from keeping me from my dream. So I spent about a whole nother year really starting top to bottom and rewrote the story, because as you mature over the years, hopefully your writing does too, and I think that was the case with this book. So then I spent another year basically rewriting it, and then sent it back to Mr. Forsman, because unfortunately Mrs. Bowski had passed away.
Was there something that happened that brought it back to the surface after all those years? I mean, I'm sure it was something that occurred to you every now and again, but was there like a physical act that made you think, oh, I need to do something with this now?
Well, it's funny because I felt so connected to the characters that they really seemed real to me, and I started dreaming about them, and it was like, finish me off. But the other very big turning point is we moved from Colorado to Kansas, and it was a point in my life where I finally had some really quiet downtime, and I realized that this was an opportunity for me to try to make something good happen at a time when, we were facing some challenges with our kids just having left home, and it was that was kind of a profound sadness for me. And I thought, I want to make something good come of this time.
So you got back in touch with Mr. Forsman, and what led you to do that at this point? I mean, since he had helped you with that first manuscript, 25 years had passed, why did you go back to him?
Well, again, he was just, as you can see and hear in his voice, he's an amazing man, and I was a little embarrassed because it had been so long, but I just thought, I just knew that if I could send it to anybody, it would be him, and he would embrace it, and that's exactly what happened. So I called him up, and I just said, I know it's been forever, but would you mind? And he was just, of course, and it never would have happened without him encouraging, and just, he has spent hundreds and hundreds of hours with me on this project.
And John, at this point, when Nancy got back in touch with you, you had retired from teaching?
That's right. After 43 years of teaching, I had been retired 5 years.
So tell me about your life at this point. I mean, you had spent your entire life in the classroom helping students. I'm sure there were many, many other students who have been profoundly influenced by you over the years. In retirement, what were you doing with your time?
Well, I always think of myself not only as a teacher but as a student, and I've never stopped studying since I retired. I've continued to read and probe ideas, and so Nancy's book, when it came into my life and my wife's life, she brought me back into that feeling of being a teacher and also a student.
And what did it mean to you? Again, so many years later, to have her reach out to you again.
Well, it was an honor, and the great thing about this whole process is, as my wife and I worked with the book, we were supposed to be, you know, offering suggestions and proofreading and things like that, but we became so involved in the book and cared so deeply about Brenna. I think she became as real to us as it was, as she was and is to Nancy. And so that ignited not only a deep connection to the book and the characters, but I slipped into my teacher role, and I began thinking about, you know, how would I teach this book? And that impetus came from my wonderful classroom experiences at UNI. It was actually Iowa State Teachers College when I started. And I started probing the form of the book. And I began to realize that, yes, it's an exciting story, a compelling story that pulls you along and you want to know what happens to Brenna. But there's an underlying life and meaning to her book, and the themes are very powerful. One of the themes that means the world to us is that, as one of my students so eloquently taught me many years ago, that there can be hope outside of difficult circumstances, and that you should argue with life until you begin to emerge from those hard circumstances. You are a worthy human being, and you deserve a life commensurate with your talent. And so we began to become totally involved in the book. Nancy's story, of course, I feel a great inspiration from, but I also feel that her life has informed the consciousness and the emotions of the book, particularly Brenna.
And Nancy, we're going to start now and then we have to take a break, but can you describe for us a little bit of the story, the narrative in your book, The Eighth Sea? What's it about?
Sure. Thanks for asking. It's a story that starts as a family in the 1700s is journeying to America by ship. There's a shipwreck, and they think they've lost their infant daughter, Brenna, at sea. So they continue heartbroken to the colonies. And the story then jumps 19 years later to Brenna's life, and she's had a fairly dismal life on St. Christopher. St. Christopher was what we now refer to as St. Kitts. It's in the West Indies. And then the story moves to Bath in Bristol, England, and ends up in Charleston, South Carolina. And it's the story of, you know, the never-ending love between this connection between Brenna and her mother, and also of this enduring romance between the man who brings them all together.
And Brenna, really having been lost at sea as a child, I mean, she grew up really very much as a slave.
Yes, very much. And she was raised as by a family that, or by a man that basically treated her as a slave, yeah. And that's, Brenna has, I've been hearing from readers all over the world that say that they're really touched by Brenna, especially those folks who've had a difficult childhood. They really find a connection with her and a hope in her.
And we are going to take a break here, Nancy. When we get back, I hope you can read just a little portion of the book for us. Would you be willing to do that?
Sure. I've got to find a spot that I want to read to you here.
All right. Sorry to put you on the spot. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes. Nancy Sproulgeis is the author of The Eighth Sea. It's a historical romance novel, and it's been reaching readers all over the world. She's here today with her high school English teacher, John Forsman, who's now retired from Ames High School. And we're talking about how her time spent in his class and the class of another English teacher at Ames High really changed her and made it possible for her to become a novelist many years later. We're talking about the path this novel has taken over 25 years. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and you're listening to an archive edition of Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm talking with novelist Nancy Sproulgeis. Her book is called The Eighth Sea. It's her first book, and it's been with her now for many years, for over 25 years, as this book was an idea and has now become a novel that has been published. And over those years, she has worked on this book with the encouragement of her high school English teacher, John Forsman. He was a high school English teacher in Ames, Iowa, now retired, and he is with us today as well. And we also want to hear from you. If there's a teacher that changed your life, let us know. Tell us your story. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.com. And we got a tweet on this subject from MS at St. Ambrose University Library. The teacher with the biggest impact in my life was my high school history teacher, led me to do my master's in history and teach for a while myself. And we'd love to hear your story. Our number again is 866-780-9100. And just before the break, Nancy, I put you on the spot completely and asked you to pick just a short part of the book to read to us. Did you find a passage?
Sure. And thanks for asking. As I said, the story is about a Brenna who was lost at sea, and she was actually rescued. But her mother, Emily, was never able to come to terms with the loss of this child. Something always didn't seem right in her mind. So this is from 19 years later, after they had lost Brenna. And it's actually the start of Chapter 2. It's set in Charleston, South Carolina. Emily brushed aside a tear as a soft Carolina breeze touched her face. She rubbed her hand along the smooth rail of her front porch and wondered how many thousands of tears she had shed, overcome by the same sick emptiness. She scanned the night sky, searching for answers that would never come. Can you hear me, little one? Can you see me through the stars? Does it make any more sense where you are? Does any of it? My darling, it's late and chilly, said Weston from behind, wrapping his arms around her. Emily had not heard her husband join her. What's wrong? What's on your mind? His words were tender. When she did not respond, he said softly, it's okay. Brenna was on her mind. Brenna was always on her mind.
Nancy Sproulgeis reading from her novel, The Eighth Sea. And Nancy, we're getting a lot of questions for you about how you overcame your learning disability, your dyslexia. And one of them, you had mentioned how you struggled with math as well as reading and writing. And this person wonders about your math disabilities. And did they improve? And how did you compensate for those?
You know, they did improve, although I'm so thankful for the invention of calculators, because I'm good on the calculator, but I'm certainly not. I'm still very hesitant, as I said, to do any sort of math orally. And I think a part of that, it came from, I had such a fear of math. And, you know, when I was young, on Fridays, I'll never forget Friday mornings at school, because it was supposed to be a fun day in math, and it seemed every teacher loved to be able to reward the kids with a game. And we would do things like Around the World, where, you know, you would have to stand up and do math orally out loud. And I was just, I still get sick to my stomach thinking about those Fridays, because I literally would get physically ill every Friday morning not wanting to go to school. Because I would realize that I would have to, I felt like the whole world would know, you know, my secret of being how awful I was. So I think more of the, you know, the impact had more of a long-lasting effect than actually the ability to do math, if that makes sense.
Sure.
But for me, I think was finally just a recognition that, I mean, I certainly had teachers working with me diligently, and my parents, you know, who spent hours and hours helping me try to get through math. And it wasn't pretty, but I you know, very slowly, you know, I was able to overcome and realize that, you know, recognition that we all aren't good in all areas, and that was probably the most beneficial thing, to finally really grasp that in my soul.
Another listener by email asks, how did you compensate for your dyslexia during college literature classes?
Well, by the time I was in college, well, actually, you know, I was very fortunate, because by the time I was probably just leaving elementary school, I had really turned a corner, and I was able to read well. And, you know, I basically grew out of it for the most part, although I still have to be careful with numbers. If I try to call a friend, very often I'll still dial the wrong number, and I'll just flip it backwards, and then I just redial it, flipping it, and then it'll go through. So
it was something that you had really overcome by the time you reached college in many ways.
Yes.
Although
yes.
Maybe not the emotional scars that were left
exactly.
Behind. Of course, I've asked you to call in and tell us about the teacher that changed your life at 866-780-9100. Gary is on the line, and he's driving through Iowa today from Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Gary.
Hi.
What's your story?
Well, in high school, I was pretty much your typical knucklehead. It didn't enjoy classes at all, but I had a drama teacher who saw something in me and put me in the lead role in our senior play, and that one act, I think, brought me out of my shell. And otherwise, I'm sure I would not have graduated from high school, but with his encouragement and I guess getting a little bit of attention in the play, I do believe that changed a lot of things. And eventually I became a self-published novelist. I have 4 books out that I'd sell out here on the road, kind of truck driver adventure stories. But I'll never forget my teacher in high school. I'm pretty sure he was the key to the whole thing. His name was C.C. Kennison. He was an English and drama teacher.
Oh, wow. And did you ever get a chance to thank him for that?
No. When I go back for reunions, we always talk about him, and he influenced a lot of kids. You know, he was just one of those special teachers that was selfless, and he seemed to bring the best out of the kids that were in his classes. He really was that type of individual, and just a great guy. But we all lost track of him. We don't know what happened to him when he left our high school.
I bet you think of him often, though.
Say again?
I'll bet you think of him often.
Yeah, he was a special guy. Like I say, he had the ability to bring out some talents that a lot of other teachers I don't think would have done. But he he certainly did it, and we admired him a lot, but we haven't heard from him in years and years. Don't know what happened to him.
Well, Gary, before I let you go, give us your full name in case somebody's looking for a good truck driver adventure story.
I've got four titles out. You can go to my website. That's Gary, G-A-R-Y-H, like hotel, Baker, GaryHBaker.com. I've got cover notes and all kinds of excerpts of the books. Everything's on there.
Oh, terrific. Thanks a lot for your call, Gary. And you can call and join us as well. The number to call is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And here's a question for you from Jeremy on Twitter, Nancy. He wants to know if your experiences of overcoming your learning challenges informed your depiction of your main character, Brenna.
Yes, as Mr. Forsman alluded to, I think in many ways, I must say I had a, despite this learning disability that I have, if so-called learning disability, I had a fabulous childhood in so many ways. Unlike Brenna's childhood, where she was basically treated as a slave and had to overcome so much more than I ever did, certainly. But I really, she struggled with an inner sense of sometimes fear and not being good enough. And I think that was portrayed in her character as well.
John, when 25 years after you first helped Nancy edit this book, you got it back and worked on it with her again. You talked about how this really captured your imagination, your wife's imagination, and you really became involved in the story and the book. But having been through this before and doing it again, what did you do to encourage Nancy to face her fears and really do something with the book this time?
Well, I think part of it related to how major themes began to emerge from the story. As you get into what I call maybe the metaphorical power underneath the story, I knew that she had achieved something here that's very difficult. And that is something I learned at UNI, where you have a fusion of idea and form. And I had a Shakespeare teacher at UNI who, in the very act of teaching a Shakespearean play, would be so moved emotionally as she discovered more and more of the embedded form, the deeper form in a Shakespearean play. And I'm sure she had taught those many, many times, but over and over she discovered something new. And so the joy that the book brought beyond the wonderful, compelling story was that there's a lot to discover in Nancy's book. She has a fusion of idea and form. And simple things like Brenna was given a bracelet that expands. Now there's a circle and it expands, the bracelet expands as she grows. And Nancy, when she read a portion of the book, her father was embracing her mother. There are a lot of embraces. The first embrace that Brenna gets is from who she thinks is her mother, Helen. And then gradually she gets the embrace of Captain Nathan. And those circles are the part of the very persuasive embedded form. And by the time you get to the end of the book, there is a gigantic circle. And because Brenna has collected a lot of people in her life who are now a circle of support. And so it was exciting to realize that, yes, it's a good story, but there are lots of things that you can follow through the book. You can follow the expandable bracelet. You can follow lanterns. You can follow quilt pieces. And so when the book ends, it ends on Christmas. And, you know, as we gather for Christmas, we think not only of the immediate people in the circle of our family, but we think of generations of people. And so there's a lot to discover, and it's very meaningful, and there's a sense in which the story doesn't end. It reminds me of some of Willa Cather's books. The ending could be another beginning, because at the end, you know, there's a birth, actually two births. And at the very last paragraph of the book, the story is starting again. And it's almost like Brenna is only 19 or 20 at the end of the book. And so she may have a ninth sea. She may have a tenth sea. She may have many more voyages, because, you know, about every 20 years we go through a transition time and emerge to another level of ourselves. So there's just an awfully lot in the book that the more you discover the form and think about it, then you just get as excited as my Shakespeare teacher at UNI, because it's another opportunity to make meaning.
And John, you said to Nancy, publish this book before I die.
Well, yes, we could tell, though, this last stint, this last round, that she was really tenacious about it. She was going to get it done. One of the most powerful things that Nancy has shared with us is, and I think it's something for all of us to remember, we don't have to create perfection for it to have impact. And even though she was fearful through the years and asking the question, you know, is it good enough? She knows herself that it's not a perfect book, but as readers have engaged in her book, she's fully aware that Brenna's story matters beyond the book. The book ends, but the lives of the people reading the book go on and on. And so it's something that we knew she would finish, and she's released to the world. And Brenna's story lives on beyond the story, because Nancy's had such favorable reaction from readers in Colorado, Kansas, Iowa, because it is their story too.
And Nancy, you decided to self-publish this book. I'm sure those words of John's probably lit a fire like nothing else.
They did. And, I realized, initially I decided that I would self-publish because I really wanted to be able to, there were so many people saying they wanted to be able to read this, like John, before they died. So I thought, well, I'll put it up on Amazon for family and friends primarily, and then I'll look for trying to get an agent and go the traditional path. But I was just, I've been overwhelmed at the response, excuse me, and it just took off beyond my wildest imagination. So it's been a blessing. And I think, talking about the themes, I think each one of us in life has our own 8C, something we're seeking and finding, looking for. And you just can't let your fear of whatever it is keep you from finding your dream in your 8C.
All right. Thank you very much, Nancy Sproul-Geis. Thank you. The book is called The Eighth Sea. And John Forsman, thank you.
Thank you very much for having us.
John Forsman is a retired English teacher from Ames High School. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese and Emily Woodbury. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. It's a production of Iowa Public Radio News.